The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2016 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2016. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and the ACCS at accsedu.org.
The newest member of your family.
Okay, Joyce, let's move to the next pose.
Okay.
With 20 joints replicating human motion, he's as flexible as a yogi.
Good job, Joyce.
Alpha 2 is smarter than your smartphone.
Rise and shine.
And he makes a great tutor.
Alpha, what's the word for orange juice in Spanish?
Jugo de naranja.
Jugo de naranja.
Sí, muy bien.
You're cute.
No, you're cuter.
Alpha 2 is like an in-home nurse or a veterinarian.
Hey, boy.
Alan, Oliver is due for his flea medication.
Thanks, Alpha.
Yes!
Alpha 2 is the perfect office assistant.
Voicemail 3.
Alpha, call City Cakes and print a copy of that contract.
Okay, Joyce. Printing.
He's a weatherman.
Bye, Alpha.
Goodbye, Kate. If you're going out, there's a 75% chance of rain.
Thanks, Alpha.
And a handyman.
All right, I got the final job. What's next, Alpha?
Step 4. Use a small screwdriver to attach the adapter flange.
Thanks, Alpha.
Alpha, right there.
Okay.
Alpha 2 is the humanoid robot that makes a fun friend for the whole family.
Oh, hey.
Alpha, take a picture. And post to Facebook.
And with an expandable platform, his skills keep growing.
Alpha, download the Storyteller app.
Downloading Storyteller app.
Alpha, what's a star?
A star is a sphere of plasma held together by its own gravity, appearing as a fixed luminous point in the sky. Would you like to hear a bedtime story?
Yeah.
Good night, room. Good night, stars. Good night to moms and dads. Good night, light. And good night, Lux. Good night, David.
Alpha 2, make him a member of your family today.
In the world filled with technology, we have all been looking for something more. The robots we have dreamed of since we were kids. The ones who could be our friends, members of our family. At UB Tech, it's our mission to make these dreams come true. We have a proven track record of bringing innovative technology to market, and Alpha 2 is our latest and best innovation. Please support us today and help make Alpha 2 a reality, because together we can dream of robots. Hello, Alpha.
Hello.
How does that make you feel? Does it spook you? What I hope to accomplish with this talk on technology in the classroom is a bit more than that. For those of you that came to hear what kind of things can I do that will leverage technology, I hope I have some things for you for that. I think I do. But I also hope that we can step beyond a bit of a pragmatic approach to what do we use, what do we not use, and start thinking about why and what and how we prepare for the future, how we prepare for life like that in a home. That's not the future, guys. That's the present. That's today. As best I know, I didn't go far into it. This and two other links were forwarded to me by my oldest son. Classically educated, one of the reasons that I stand here, because this was for my kids. that is my involvement in classical education. There are three companies. That's just one of them. That was the one I picked because it's the one I liked the most. But this stuff is reality, and it impacts how we get information. It impacts how we live. I was joking with somebody a few minutes ago who took a picture of somebody in a restaurant. Six people around a table, parents, children. Took it last night. All of them buried in their phone at dinner, for the entire dinner. I said, one of the things that we've done from time to time is you put your phone in the middle of the table, and first person to touch it buys dinner. It can get expensive. But one of the reactions that I think we might be most inclined to, because we tend to be a backward-looking group of people, we see a time period in the past where things were done better. We're conservatives. I have a liberal sister. She happens to live in town. She said about this convention, you're going with a bunch of Republicans to speak to them. I said, no, it's not quite like that. And we have a wonderful relationship that way. But the point that we need to realize is we're inclined to think that the past was better and we need to hold on to it. We need to reclaim it. And I have some words to tell you about that you'll hear in just a minute. Some things that I think will be impactful. So as I continue to introduce, some of you may know I live in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. If you happen to know where our office is, you know that picture was probably taken at the Costco that's within walking distance of it. So while we run an online school and a curriculum business, an online school that has students from probably over 50 countries in it, we live in the midst of that. Now, you'll find this is simply parenthetical for humor's sake, but you'll find this interesting. You might ask the question, if you didn't, you should have. Why are they at Costco? Don't they grow their own food? The answer is, they don't go there to buy green beans and to buy burgers. They go there to buy junk food. That's where they get their junk food. Don't be too fooled about the Amish. They're not a great model in every instance. But the point, of course, is that the Amish have gotten stuck in the late 19th century. And they've done it for philosophical reasons that have created a whole host of problems. I'm not suggesting that being Amish is a bad thing. I'm simply saying that there are aspects about it that are not well thought through, that are creating very interesting and complicated sociological phenomena. Now, there's another side or another ditch on the other side of this road, and it's clearly the idea that we easily appreciate that new and novel isn't always better. Who remembers New Coke? We're in Atlanta, guys. That was a monumental failure. That picture came from one of the lists on the sidebar links that you get on Facebook that says top 10 marketing flops of all time. I don't remember if it was number one or not, but it might ought to have been if it wasn't. Of course, we've got our own educational flops that we tend to laugh at, too. Anybody ever heard of Common Core? How about whole language learning to read? Face it. We're attracted to classical education for good and necessary reasons. There are some things that were done in the past that were done better than they are in the broadest sense today. And we want to reclaim those things. But what I want to do is impress on you as we spend this time together that we've got to recognize that the river can't be stepped in the same twice. So one of the things this is going off outline a little bit, but one of the things that I've had interesting conversations with people
as it relates to rhetoric, for example, they want to go back to Aristotle's rhetoric. I don't have it on firsthand knowledge. I've never met Aristotle. But I'd bet you, if Aristotle wrote a rhetoric book today, it would look a little different. The question is, how would it be different? That's what you've got to figure out. Now, I'm going to help you, and you're going to help each other. This is a conversation that's going to be going on for the rest of our lives and for the rest of our professional involvements in classical education. But it is an important, in fact, necessary conversation. Those are the good old days. It was the best I could come up with as an image for this quote. Teachers won't be replaced by technology. But teachers who don't use technology will be replaced by those who do. Try teaching without books. Books were a technological advancement at one point. Pretty loose definition of technology, I'll grant. But at some point, books were a cultural phenomenon that we think as normative. They are to us. They weren't to before the 1400s. Different world. It didn't operate the same way. So we've got to recognize that this thing is a moving target. The questions as it relate to technology, I've been involved in classical education in earnest since 1992. We took the initiative to start a school in Orlando after reading Recovering the Lost Tools of Learning. It got us involved in all kinds of things. And it was a life-changing thing. It was a career-changing thing for me, actually. And when we first got involved, there were questions about technology that maybe focused on calculators. How do you use a calculator in the context of a classical education? Well, things like tool, not crutch, became terms that described in shorthand the kinds of things. You know, we talk about books and e-books as if they're the same category. And they're simply two means of delivering things differently. And we like the feel of a book. Try taking your Kindle to a bath. It doesn't survive. Books don't survive that well either. But they're a little safer. But the point is, it's not so simple as to say book or e-book. And those are the kinds of things that we have to start learning about. Now, in a group like this, I imagine you all are all over the board in terms of comfort with technology, in terms of familiarity with technology, in terms of use of technology. And so I'm trying to shoot at you with a shotgun and not a rifle. Some of these things will apply to you, and some of these things will apply to the person sitting next to you. And you have to appreciate that. One of the things that I mentioned is, I've got a kid, my oldest, who is doing some cutting-edge things technologically with his classical education, based in Santa Monica, built a tech business, sold it, now building another one, and virtual and augmented realities. And some of this stuff is really mind-boggling. I need him to describe it to you as to the things that are being worked on. What to anticipate. And it is going to continually change our world. We look back and we say, man, the last 10 years have been unbelievable compared to the prior 10 years. How many of you think, when you take 10 seconds to think about it, that the next 10 years are going to have no change? How many of you think that the change is going to be at the same pace? I don't know where it's all going to be. I believe that those categories are going to create some very interesting phenomena. Imagine your first experience with somebody walking down the street who's talking out loud, but they have a suit on. So you think most people that walk down the street and talk out loud with nobody around them are crazy, but he's got a suit on. That's not crazy. That doesn't square with crazy. And then you see this little thing sticking in his ear. Wait till there are things over their eyes. I'm not talking about Google glasses. I'm talking about the kinds of things that you probably think they can't see you, but they can, and you don't know what else they see. That's not 10 years from now. That's tomorrow. The next gen of Google phones, the Androids, are introducing some things that will allow you, when you've got your camera, because of 3D technologies, to know so much about where you are and what you're up to, you can't believe it. And it's that kind of stuff that is becoming a reality. Now, I digress a little bit, just for the purpose of stimulating you a little bit. That's not too much in the classroom. Let's get back to the point at hand.
It was so loud earlier, and I needed it for the video, but thank you. Let's move beyond the introduction now. So the question is, why use technology? Okay? Talked about a calculator, talked about the idea of tool versus crutch. If you've heard me speak on things related, you've heard me talk about the idea of Algebra 2 as an example. You learn how to do a two-variable algebraic equation. And when you have a mastered level of understanding of that equation, it is a waste of time, in my estimation, to continue to build out the answers of use this to get that in terms of A, B answers so that you can get the graph of it. A graphing calculator becomes a wonderful tool to save time in that process. Simple uses of technology. Of course, the idea of books going into a one small place and being very portable. Another use of technology. Those are simple things. But the questions still beg, why? And as you approach problem solving of any type, again, a parenthetical, think first, why? If you start with why, a lot of other things come in place. Not how, not when, not what. Start with why. That will drive decisions, I think, in a whole lot more effective way. So one thing is, students love it. If you are over 40, you just don't understand technology like an under 30 does. I'm giving a little grace between 30 and 40, so if you're in that category, you're kind of exempt at the moment. I don't talk cutting-edge technologies much with people over 40 because they don't have much to offer, not compared to the kids. And I don't know if it will always be that way. I don't know what it will be like in another 20 years. But kids do things, and they intuit things in a way that I don't know how to describe as anything other than qualitatively different that we don't have much appreciation for. I think I just stepped on a cord. Little did I know there was a plug that would unplug things. Well, it'll come up okay. I won't wait for it. So, simply stated, we want our kids to love learning. Use of technology. Because, as a broad generalization, they love it, is one reason to use technology. But there are other, more significant ones. This is simply a form of communication. Okay? I'll talk a little bit more as we get into this about learning management systems and use in classrooms and that sort of thing. This is a form of this is a representative form of learning management system. If you're not familiar with the terms, learning management systems are essentially uses of technology for administrative purposes at a classroom level, keeping grades, records, curriculum, courses, communications, and that sort of thing. It provides phenomenal ways for communication with parents, with students, among students, among school staff. My wife said, when I started putting this outline together, every school has a learning management system that they put to good use. You don't need to tell them that. Okay? Well, I told you that now. Who was right? Was she right or was I right? Who doesn't have a learning management system that they use every day? She was right. I should have known. But the point really is, they're not done developing. They're not done adding features. They're not done figuring out how to do more, different, and presumably better. And we need to be in tune and ready for those things, because they do provide incredible opportunities. Pretty simple thing. Obviously, you're all familiar with it. You're also pretty familiar with the idea of research, the internet. I'm not particularly upset that the card catalog idea at a library is a gone thing. I could never figure it out in the first place when I was taught it. I'm kind of glad I got something I can understand how to use now. Maybe you are too. There might be some hardcore librarians in here thinking, we got to teach the card catalog, and God bless you. You're fighting a losing battle, but God bless you anyway. But it is absolutely astounding. Again, I go back to my own kids. Drive by something, see something. I wonder what that is. 30 seconds later. Well, it says here, the default mentality is, it's available, it's in my pocket, I can know it immediately. Now that's knowledge. It's not wisdom, it's not understanding, but it's knowledge. And it is unbelievably powerful. I don't have a philosophy or a theory to offer you as it relates to a classroom context, but I would ask you to consider what it might mean there, because it does have implications. And I'll also tell you this. People that learn to use card catalogs are some of the best people doing that I know. And it is a powerful tool. But let's make sure we understand what tools do and what they don't do. Here is a radical issue. When I first got involved in classical education, there was a concerted effort to understand the value of classroom learning. By that I mean people coming together and working together in what was not a Montessori, individualistic kind of mindset. And I'm not here to advocate for that environment so much as I am to advocate for the benefit technology provides to personalize dealing with a student, whether it be learning style, capability, or interest that makes them connect to the primary objectives. We've got to rethink this in significant and comprehensive ways, because the model of teacher and students all going the same pace together, the same direction with the same things, is in the best interest of the teacher, but not the student. It doesn't provide the student their best opportunity. It doesn't go to their giftedness, to their learning style in the same way. And technological tools provide us some ability to parse things out a bit among groups or even among students. I don't know that we can get into that in an elaborate and extensive way. I just want you to start thinking about that. Do you really want every student to move at the pace that the average is able to go? When somebody is able to do more, to do faster, and to go further, that's a God-given gift that you as a teacher or administrator ought to value helping to facilitate. And there are lots of disciplines that lend themselves to that, particularly what I would call the concept-oriented disciplines as opposed to the content-oriented ones. So maybe summarily, in spite of the fact that transitions into new ways of thinking, new ways of doing, are riddled with lots of problems. The family at dinner, all buried in their portable device, is not the way we're supposed to live. It's not. It's a problem in transition. We're still learning how to deal with that. Technology is not going to get rid of sin, and that starts to fall into that kind of category of doing the wrong thing at a certain time. But we've got to realize that education in general is better because of technological advances. We've got to figure out how that becomes the case. How should we use technology? Now, please don't forget my first statement. Computers aren't going to replace teachers. Technology is not going to replace teachers. There is nothing more important in the educational process, not the curriculum, not the philosophy, not the biblical worldview. There's nothing more important to the educational process than the teacher. And I have no expectation that will ever change. The question is whether or not the teacher will develop in order to be as good as he can be in that process. But there are times where the computer can do things better than we can. But an interesting phenomenon, this may fall into a bit the category of a shameless plug, so bear with me. We created at Veritas Press, one of the first things we did was created a history curriculum that took organized by 5 years and 32 events a year and that sort of thing. And we've seen people use it in any number of ways. My wife, who's one of the most gifted teachers I've ever known, seen teachers at the schools that we were involved in starting, seen teachers at schools where I was visiting on accreditation visits, using this curriculum and teaching and doing a remarkable job. But I'm going to tell you right now that the self-paced programs that we did that are fully integrated and complete, get results that no teacher has ever been able to get. The computer becomes a teacher. Now, that doesn't mean the teacher's been replaced. That simply means that way of drilling, presenting, reviewing was systematically done and holds the student accountable in ways that can't be done easily otherwise and produces unbelievable results. And so we've got to realize we've got a tool opportunity in those kinds of things. What does that mean to you in your classroom setting? I'm not suggesting everybody needs to go that direction. I'm simply saying, and because it's not always the case that we have to say whatever's the best is the way we ought to do it. There are lots of other variables to it. I'm simply saying as it relates to acquiring the information, this is grammar school, this is absorbing, this is one directional, getting it down cold. I've never seen anything work any better, and it's been technologically. Talk about the individualization approach. One of the things that I saw happen with a kid was he was being homeschooled at the time. He was going back and forth between schools and homeschool. One of the mothers that was working with him said, we can do 2 years of math with this child and another child in 1 year. Using Saxon math, didn't need the review, cut that out. All of a sudden, it condensed enough to where the school year allowed to do 2 years. That child leveraged that. That began in about fourth grade. That child leveraged that to the point of completing Calc 3 and linear algebra with differential equations in high school. It made a difference. How do we do that? Some individualization, because I guarantee you're not going to find a class to do that. Individualization. Dealing with kids when they're struggling, dealing with kids when they're excelling, is an individual attention thing that technology gives us the opportunity to do today in a much easier way than it did yesterday. What technologies? Let's talk a little bit practically now. For those of you that came here to say, tell me what I can use, this is the part of the talk that will be helpful there. Okay, we talked about learning management systems. This happens to be the one that we use. It's called Schoology. Interesting story behind Schoology. College-age students had a project to do about, I don't even know what the project was, but the project was Schoology. And the professor said, guys, you're onto something. Build it into a business. Now I think they're probably in the neighborhood of 8 to 10 million users out of a college project. It's the way things happen. Sometimes an idea comes out of an environment. And what it is, as you all know, nobody raised their hand when I asked, the environment that helps facilitate much of the activity that happens academically and communicative and from a communication standpoint in the classroom. We've got, and I could go into some details there. I'll just mention them real quickly. I jumped past it, so let me just go back. Communicating homework, quick quiz on a reading assignment, organizational tool for turning in assignments, or just some of the things that provide very quick ways of using a learning management system as a time-saving mechanism for you to be able to do what you want and need to do. Of course, social media is a phenomenon that we don't think of much in the educational realm. But let me read this from a Facebook executive who is faced with addressing educational communities. It might give you some ideas for how you can use some of these things yourself. Create a friend list. If you're a teacher, you can create a friend list called students and adjust your privacy settings to control exactly what your students will see. For example, you might allow students to see your basic profile information, but not your tagged photos or wall posts. So now you've got a place, the technology exists, you've got a place within Facebook to build connection that's a place to build conversation. Use Facebook groups for engagement. You can create a Facebook group for a course you're teaching or a specific class project and invite all your students to join the group. That will provide a way for students and educators to discuss relevant topics on a platform students love. There also is a discussion board where students can share their thoughts. I didn't know these things about Facebook. Maybe you did. They're just opportunities. I've never seen Facebook really used at a classroom level, and I thought it an interesting thing because it's a way to connect with students and to push that learning to them and among themselves outside the classroom, which is obviously what we want. The classroom is a sterile environment that's intended to have things happen elsewhere. And as we cause that, as the learning happens, this is a way to bridge that. Twitter is another category. Students and teachers can easily share thoughts, opportunities, etc., build classroom community. It works same way for parents. Have you ever thought about, maybe do it, inviting your parents things that you might say, tweeting them as a way of just communicating. Hey, tonight at 7 o'clock, there's a program on that's related to something we talked about in class today. I encourage you to consider watching that with your children. Just quick things. All these little things add up and sometimes become phenomenal benefits. Of course, teachers communicating with each other. Students communicating with each other as well. And, of course, teachers communicating to teachers. Teachers communicating to students, another category. Here's something, though, that I think is probably not well used yet. And that's the whole idea of polling. In our online world, it's very easy to do. In a classroom setting, it's a little, physical classroom setting, it's a little bit more difficult because you're reliant on some sort of electronic device. I don't know what the apps are that might be available to do this. I don't know what learning management systems you use and what opportunities that give you. But the whole idea of asking a question that they then answer very quickly on their device. Quickly tabulated, quickly organized, and maintained for as long as you want to maintain it. You're building a history of things. You're building reference points. You're building documentation. And it creates wonderful opportunities. There are probably any number of other ways that you can move into that area. But the whole idea, we've seen our teachers who teach online use this in very significant ways. Sometimes as a way of having education stretch before or after class by having a polling experience when they get there before the class starts. Same kind of thing can happen for you in a physical classroom as well. (Clears throat) The other aspect, I talked about individualization, and if you didn't cringe at the possibility that was going to make a lot of work for you, you should have. But technology becomes an answer to that, too, or at least a possible answer. The whole idea of technology functioning as an assistant. Mentioned the idea of some self-paced classes as a way of doing that, while giving individual attention to others. One person's doing something here while you're working with another person. Just very practical opportunities that are done in any number of ways with reading groups and things like that already. It was just another way of extending that and probably broadening it as well. Many of you are probably familiar with a math product called ALEKS, A-L-E-K-S. I don't know what it stands for, but it's an acronym. And the idea of that being something that helps students by doing math problems, the program discerning patterns of the student's work, maybe patterns of error, and then producing work that focuses on more practice for the weakness. Great use of technology, great way to individualize, a great way to help students learn and shore up weaknesses. Now, here's a novel concept. The flipped classroom. The inverted classroom. Anybody here never heard either of those terms? Okay, it's a new idea. The idea is actually not really new, the idea of giving a reading assignment and then coming to class to discuss that assignment is a form of an inverted classroom. But it's the idea of doing those things that might normally or might previously or currently have been done in the classroom, but could be done at home to be done at home. So, for example, let's take math as an example. My experience as a student in math was that the first 5 or 10 minutes of class might be reviewing homework from the prior day. The next 20 minutes would be the teacher introducing a new concept back to the students, back to the audience, writing on the board, showing that concept, talking about that concept, students listening. Everything is one directional, teacher to student. Then the student starts to do work on that. It might be homework that starts in class, might be some classroom work, and then homework. The inverted classroom says, why are we wasting time on one directional communication, one directional aspects of education? Let's do that at home, and let's bring the homework in where we want to work with the student. In essence, reading from someone else's statement, flipping the classroom means the students get first exposure to new material outside of class, usually via reading or lecture videos, and then use class time to do the harder work of assimilating that knowledge, perhaps through problem-solving, discussion, or debates. That kind of an approach. Now, I think that makes a lot of sense. Are you familiar with Bloom's taxonomy, the idea of how learning progresses in that process? Well, again, reading from someone else's work. In terms of Bloom's revised taxonomy, which is a 2001 phenomenon, this means that students are doing the lower levels of cognitive work, gaining knowledge and comprehension, outside of class and focusing on the higher forms of cognitive work, application, analysis, synthesis, and or evaluation in class, where they have the support of their peers and instructor. This model contrasts from the traditional model in which first exposure occurs via lecture in class with students assimilating knowledge through homework, thus the term flipped classroom. Now, when I first heard that really resonated. That made a lot of sense because I know how valuable discussion time is. Socratic process. And you do too. Because you're a classical educator. You appreciate the value of discussion, especially with older kids. But it has to be primed by something, and what they're saying is, more time for discussion if we prime it first outside of class. I think it's a genius idea that needs to continue to be pursued and refined as we think about how we implement it. Well, let me, how are we doing time-wise? I'll leave some time for questions. We've got about 18 minutes left. Let me not beat that up. There may be some questions related to it, but let me move into what I'm calling final remarks, but that's a little bit of a lie. let's make sure that we don't fall prey to our own defined fallacy of chronological snobbery. Just because it's in the past, just because we gained it from the past, and just because it was proven to be good in the past, doesn't mean that's all there is. It doesn't mean that it's better. We've got to recognize that things are coming at us from the future that are changing our lives for the better. Now, we get frustrated in these transitions. We sometimes schooled our students, schooled our children, put your phone down. It's not time for that now. We've got these transitions to deal with. But they're transitions. Portable communication devices are not going to go away. They're going to become more sophisticated, they're going to become more significant, and they might even find themselves inside our skin. But we're going to have to learn how to deal with them. And we want to make them be a valuable tool, not a crutch, and certainly not a distraction to the humanity that we have and need to preserve for obvious reasons. Count the cost. Think of all the implications. I'm going to show you something in a closing video that I have no idea where it is in relation to tomorrow, how many tomorrows away it is, or if it will happen the way that it is. A lot of times those things that we speculate on get morphed into some very different things. And so as we look at the future, as we look at what's coming down the pike, we've got to realize the change is inevitable and change can be providing us some very good opportunities. But there are costs associated with it. They're human costs. They're financial costs. There are lots of different costs, and we've got to understand them. If you don't get anything else from this talk, get these two things. Technology can be our friend, and we have got, that's one. And two, technology has to be understood in light of what we already know to be important. It will not change that we will become less human. That's not going to happen. We have lots of reason to believe that, most significantly the biblical truth of it. But it can compromise that humanity if we let it. And those are the kinds of costs that we've got to do. We've got to be thinking about this. We've got to be planning for it and plan well. This is going to run about 2 minutes, after which I'll come back up and be happy to talk further or, excuse me, answer questions as you might have them. This is just an idea of what might be. Iron Man meets education. Thank you very much for your attention and for your interest in this topic. It's hard to live with constant change. Frankly, one of my ways of dealing with it has been to delegate it. But there's no getting around the fact that the world is moving at a fast pace, and there are opportunities that we can leverage because of it. Any questions or thoughts? That, I have no idea. If you want the link, I can provide it for you. I have it on my outline. It's a YouTube video. I don't even know what to search for to find it, but I do have the link. Future classroom. Yeah, there are any number of things that you could try. And as it relates to that, there is no claim of reality there. It's just thinking outside the box, maybe. I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. And I don't know how commercially reasonable it might be at this point, but we know how quickly those things change, too. Thank you.
I was going to ask what kind of policies you all might have for social media engagement.
Question is of policy with regard to social media engagement. Interesting phenomenon, because social media allows people to behave a little differently because they do it in a more invisible way. And we've had all kinds of problems happen, boys talking to girls inappropriately and those kinds of things. And the bottom line is the same kinds of principles apply, and then policies get implemented. And in a transitional world, I think you've got to also recognize sensitivities to people who are at a different point in the transition process. Yeah, I'm reformed. It took me 25 to 30 years to become reformed, and then I expect somebody else to become reformed the first time I talk to them. That's not the way the world works. And so we've got to think in terms of transitions. So policies of opt-in opportunity for parents are things to consider. And learning management systems and controlled environments give you those kinds of abilities to do that. But at the same time, what you want to be doing is some proactive aspects, too, of educating people and helping others, just like I'm trying to do in this talk, come along.
So the follow-up on that, I guess, is I'll set up in the classroom a variety of different avenues that kids can engage with each other, and it's always a question of how open and public do you make those domains, whether it be a blog or a Google Hangout or something that's more private.
Well, you've got age sensitivities that you've got to be careful and concerned about also, and frankly, there have been some pretty good laws that have come to bear on that. I don't know if how familiar you are with some of the things that have happened in the app world and that sort of thing, and the problems and fines that have been imposed on people who have collected without permission children's emails and that kind of thing. So I think that there's been healthy movement at various levels and that sort of thing, but just like one of the aspects of anticipating the opportunities and benefits of technology is also thinking in terms of what the downsides are. What can go wrong? And those are things. The bottom line, guys, no matter what we do, you will never be able to program your decision making away from wisdom. And that's what happens there in a substantial way. But yes. The question is whether or not there are grants for technology for private Christian schools, and the answer that I can give you is I have no idea. I would expect that as these kinds of things become more important and more cost prohibitive, that there will be very sympathetic organizations, we're in Georgia, like the Chick-fil-A folks. And also the folks from Oklahoma City that have the Hobby Lobby. Those kinds of people have been incredibly benevolent in some pretty forward-thinking areas. But I don't know of anything that exists today. I'm sure it does. I'm not a grant writer. I'm not a grant researcher. I'm the wrong person to answer.
We teach AutoCAD, and AutoCAD benefited us by giving us $3,000 worth of software to do that. But we had to apply.
Software companies in education tend to be pretty benevolent with direct contact, and for good reason. Because when you get trained, familiar, comfortable with something, they know the commercial uses, the commercial purchases of that are going to be more likely. So think that way, communicate that way, sell yourself that way, ask that way. Yes. The question on the flipped classroom is how to manage time. As I have had responsibility for managing quantities of homework, we've set boundaries that were based on a philosophy of a child. And a flipped classroom wouldn't change that. It would simply say, okay, if math is allowed 2 hours of homework a week, that doesn't change because the classroom's flipped, is the way I would look at it. That's my first response. I might think differently about that given a little bit more time, but it seems pretty self-evident and logical as a starting point. Yes?
Getting back to policies, as far as what I hear you saying is that schools who have policies that say teachers can't text or teachers can't interact social media with their students may need to be rethought, may need to be reevaluated.
Well, there are reasons why there are rules like teachers shouldn't have private, off-work hours communications with students. Every one of us knows of sexual predator failures in those categories and all kinds of problems that have happened. But to go to the opposite extreme is to not put into place some of the monitoring elements that are possible. The Facebook executive quote that I read deals with that, setting certain parameters for communication, for what the student can see on the teacher's profile and that sort of thing. I don't know what all those rules might be, but what I or policies might need to be. But what I know is that there are babies in their bathwaters, and we want to make sure we don't throw them out together. Community engagement, accountability, transparency become the principles that really start to provide guidance to wisdom applied in new venues. Anything else? Thank you so much. I hope you found it helpful. Thank you. I don't know where tomorrow is. The one thing I know is I lived my 60 years with an awful lot of change, and I don't think it's slowing down. Thanks.